This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and with me, Carol Aslan, this week we have two of BFM's finest. He is a producer on The Morning Run. He's the one who makes it all happen. He is Sim Wee Woon.
Hello, good to be here.
Good to have you back. And we have a first-timer. He is the voice that you hear on two shows, on I Love KL and on Night School. And he's also the producer of The Night Shift. Yeah, I am not familiar with what that means. But anyway, I'm sure it's fantastic. And he is Hanif Baharuddin.
Hello.
Hello.
Woo-hoo! First timer. And our three topics this week. Well, you know, Malaysia is not the... It's a bit gloomy around Malaysia at the moment, what with COVID-19, which is why we're going to do a special happiness-themed episode of A Bit of Culture. So our three topics will be, is it selfish to be happy? Topic number two is the changing meaning of the word happy. And finally, topic number three is the darkness that makes Hanif happy. So, Sim, is it selfish to be happy?
Well, first of all, I just want to say I'm very happy to be here. What I want to talk about is like is the blurring lines between happiness and selfishness. Okay, because like, you know, yeah, you know, is it selfish to be happy? I really don't know. I mean, say, okay, let's put out a situation. Okay? You, Cam, you and me, okay? Something really bad happened to you, but something really great happened to me. Mm-hmm. We meet up, mm-hmm. and then, you know, I mean, I want to share the something that really good that happened to me because I'm happy about it and I want to share my happiness with you. But then at the same time, you know, you just experience something bad and you want to share your misery with me so that I can sympathize and know. So when we try to do that, I mean, is it selfish of me to kind of like, I want to talk about my...
Very selfish.
Yeah, exactly. But isn't it selfish of you to kind of like want to like push your sadness to me as well? Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah, that goes follows the saying that misery loves company.
That's right.
So, yeah.
Right.
So,
and I would want
more company. But not only that. I mean, like, okay, just imagine this scenario is like, you know, like, say, you know, you've been working really hard and you're saving money and, you know, let's say you find happiness and joy through eating food, okay, mm-hmm. and like... yeah, you know, you're like, oh, okay, you know, I want to blow like a few hundred bucks on like a really good steak, you know, which is like reflective somewhat of excess because, you know, in some parts of the world, people can't even afford to have anything close to a steak, you know. So when you're confronted with these kinds of disparities, you know, you feel sad. But then again, you know, if I put that, you know, nice medium rare steak with some butter and, you know, some you know, some sauce and all in my mouth, I become happy. So, you know, is it selfish of me that I enjoy food and I'm happy while others are not? I mean, so, you know, some might say you're overthinking it, but it does have roots. It does have, I guess, you know, it does have a kind of like deeper meaning to talk about it, right?
Sure. Can I just ask though? That scenario you painted there with the steak and everything, mm. do you actually genuinely, Sim, do you actually feel guilt sometimes?
When I'm confronted with it, I guess, you know, because I've had situations where, I mean, not only steak, I can't remember exactly the details, but, you know, it's just like I like stuff. I like to buy stuff, you know, I like shoes, I like watches and stuff like that, you know. Mm. So there are situations where I'm confronted with like, you know, like, oh, I bought this new pair of shoes, they're awesome and blah, blah, blah. And then someone goes like, you know, yeah, but, you know, that. Kids here, some kids can't afford shoes, or you know, there's sure. an environmental consequence, and like I'm like, oh yeah, you're right, and I feel sad, but then again, I feel happy if I do that as well, and you know, I worked hard for it, and it's not like I don't like I. It's not like I'm out to make other people suffer, you know. It's not like I try to contribute to the poverty that you know. Okay. I actually try to do my part, you know, with charity and whatnot, but. So then there's this kind of like, at what point is it selfish and at what point is it happy?
All right. Yeah. Okay. Hanif, pass judgment.
I think it's perfectly fine to do something for yourself, to want to be happy. It's just that I think based on the situations that you've described, I think it's easier or it's better for you to be aware of your surroundings and also to be sensitive, quote unquote, right? I mean, I agree with the first example that you gave just now. I also feel like I sometimes question why, you know, misery has to take precedence over happiness, right? But then again, that's how the world works, right? You need to be sensitive. You need to be tactful when it comes to a situation that is a bit more, I guess, sensitive to the person around you, right? So it and happiness is something that is joyful, is positive, and it's not enough, and it's not good for you to sometimes share positive when share positivity when others are sort of like suffering, right?
I mean, yeah, there's a timing. I'm not gonna be like, you know, like oh my god, I won the lottery in like a funeral, you know, that's gonna be like weird. Unless you go like, oh god, I won the lottery, but I'm gonna pay for the funeral. Maybe that works, but yeah, you know, it's a timing thing. But you know, there are some situations where timing is out of the question, and it's hard to choose. You know?
I think your two scenarios are connected in that there is that common trope of advice that is given when someone is going through a miserable moment, and they will say, yes, but you're so much better off than the rest of humanity. You know, Sim, you have nice shoes, you got a nice watch. How can you complain? How can you be sad?
Yeah, yeah.
But when faced with those abstractions, the brain and emotions just simply cannot compute that. And if anything, all it does is make you feel worse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's kind of perplexing, no? I mean, you understand the intention to kind of like, you know, oh, but you're better off. I mean, it's reflective of like, but, you know, you could be worse. But somehow that never really helps the situation.
Never works,
and you... Even the person doling out the advice would have experienced that same situation. They've probably had something bad and someone told them the exact same thing. So it's kind of weird that you don't remember that it doesn't really great. So, yeah.
Yeah, and also there's a selfishness in that response, because what you're saying is, take your misery away from me. Cancel it immediately. And I don't want to know about it. Whereas the hardest thing to do, and I think probably the best thing to do, is just simply listen and say absolutely nothing.
Yeah. I mean, the best advice is to listen. But also, I guess sometimes it's the intention of like, you know, like I want to share my happiness, and as a kind of like example of like, you know, there's more joy. I guess it's also a situation of what are you being sad about? You know, if someone goes around like, you know, I'm like, I'm sad about like something that I can't control, and you know, no matter what advice, no matter how much listening you do, doesn't really change the situation.
Mm. Can I ask a personal question, okay, though? Related. Have any of us found joy and happiness in the misery of others? Schadenfreude, it's called.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah? Go on, Hanif.
Yes, I guess so. Shame to admit, but yeah.
Yeah, me never. I'm better than you two.
Oh, wow, really? Oh, I remember some conversations we've had, which, you know, which kind of sounds like you were enjoying misery about this.
Anyway, we're moving on. So, I don't know, Sim. I don't know if we've answered your question at all. I don't think we have, have we?
I don't know. Is it selfish to even answer that question? Because you might make other people feel sad?
Yeah. I don't know. It's a whatever the situation is, you've got to judge it by... But you've been in that situation, haven't you?
I'm sure. I mean, I'm sure everyone has been in that situation, you know? I mean, it's a type of thing where... everyone's out to be happy. Everyone's out to pursue. I mean, okay, say for example, right? I mean, like, you know, the recent political changes, you know.
Some people are happy.
Some people are happy, right? Yeah, you know, and you know, I mean, they will claim that they will use whatever they did and their own happiness to help bring happiness to others. But was it selfish what they did? I don't know, right?
All right, yeah. Well, that brings us, though, we must move on to topic number two. And I think that brings us neatly to topic number two, which is the changing meaning of the word happiness, the English word happiness. And perhaps we'll get a chance to talk about the equivalent word in other languages as well. So happy. It's a funny word. If you say it enough, it sounds just more and more weird. But I guess that's true of any word.
Happy.
It's a Middle English word. So it kind of came into being in around the 14th century. In those days, the word, it was two words, meant good luck. It meant to have good luck. If you had good fortune, you were happy. And you could also happy someone else. You could give them good fortune. They could take part in your good fortune. over time, it changed. I'm going to leap forward to now. And then step back again. Now happy means something very individualistic, something that we can experience on our own. It's also something I think that society and pharmacology and the TV and everything teaches us is the aim and purpose of life is to be happy. And happy is a very valid, probably the most valid thing, whereas sadness is invalid. It's something we need to stamp out quickly.
It's interesting because I think for my generation and younger generation, it comes with the generation of like admitting and talking about sadness. You know, I guess previously it is sort of like a bit taboo to, you know, say you're depressed or say, you know, but now it's okay. And in fact, you should, if you are sad, you should say you are sad.
God, you millennials are just too damn evolved. I fought for your right to be like that.
Yeah, you fought for our right to be sad. And now I'm sad.
But having said that, Sim, I think while the conversation about sadness is now, I guess, a bit more accepted, the aim is still to be happy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. Why you do that is so that you can be happy. I mean, the aim of anything really is to be happy, no?
But, okay, let's be very bland then. So happy would be sitting at home playing computer games and watching funny sitcoms.
One form of it.
Okay. Yeah. But if we jump back a little bit to a very famous use of the word is in the US Declaration of Independence, where it says, amongst other things, the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which again is a weird thing to say. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of sitting at home playing video games and watching sitcoms.
I don't think when they wrote the Constitution, they had that.
They did not have that in mind, because now if we have an individualistic sense of what happy means, then the pursuit of happiness was an idea that society as a whole, it wasn't an individual thing, but it was for society as a whole. Your individual responsibility was to work so that society would rise up in well-being and good fortune, and that you could not experience something like true holistic happiness if the rest of society was in a bad way. But that sense of communal pursuit of happiness somewhere in the industrial age, well, certainly in Europe, they started getting a middle class that could afford individual pleasures, and then in Asia somewhat later the same thing, then it became about the individual being able to have a right to happiness and the pursuit of happiness. So it's like the word genius was about a society as a whole. You'd say the genius of Malaysia would be, you know, Malaysia's ability to do whatever Malaysia does brilliantly.
Back then.
Well, you know, play badminton or what have you. Whereas now we see genius as being something that an individual has. And we think of, I don't know, Albert Einstein as being a poster boy for that.
Yeah. But that's the reality of today, right? I mean, the fact that everything is individualized. Yeah, you don't think about community anymore. You don't really think about things in a communal sense.
The exposure of the individual is much higher now, because everyone has a social media account. Everyone, you know, has the ability to search up a name and actually find some semblance of information on anyone. Back then, it was hard. You know, back then, when you know, hundreds of years ago, maybe decades ago, before the internet, when you meet someone, you know, the kind of like descriptors that you use, you know, is like, oh yeah, I met this guy. You know, he's from Africa. He's from China. You know, I mean, then you, by using that, people would kind of like relate that to whatever's happening recently. I mean, to their stereotypes of it. But now, because a lot of these stereotypes and a lot of these characteristics have been broken, because, you know, I mean, now when you meet someone, you kind of like, I mean, from what I notice is that when you meet someone, you don't just...
You don't see that.
You don't see it. You don't say, I met a guy, he's race. Funny, he's weird, he's funny, you know.
You've seen an individual.
Individuals, yeah. So, you know, again, so when you apply that in a larger context, you know, I mean, people don't really look at someone from a country or a community anymore. They look at your individual achievements, your individual, what you did individually. I mean, there are still a lot of the stereotypes out there. There's still people that perpetuate stereotypes. I mean, the recent virus outbreak, you know, I mean, it caused everyone to go crazy and fear Asians out of nowhere. Yeah. But I think, whereas probably back then it was harder to see that individualness of someone.
Sim, you believe in the perfectibility of mankind, don't you? You're an optimist, aren't you?
Yeah.
Hanif, where do you stand on that?
I'm more of an idealist, I guess.
No, yeah. Well, for me,
I'm quite pragmatic.
Yeah, I have that Japanese kind of, I don't know if it's Japanese, but somewhere I interviewed way back then told me before that, yes, I believe in the perfection of mankind, but I believe in a sense where it's a constant pursuit. You know, like it's somewhat of like, we'll never be perfect, but we will always strive to be perfect.
And we strive alone?
Individually and then collectively.
How? How do we do things collectively these days?
Well, could you host this show by yourself?
No.
There you go.
No, it's different though.
Yeah.
It's different though. I mean, I'm not bringing life and liberty to the East Coast.
You're bringing it to the listeners.
Yeah. How many of Cam on this one? I think, I mean, back to your first, back to the first topic just now. I think to a certain extent, we are a bit more selfish when it comes to purchasing, pursuing our goals, right? And that includes happiness.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. We tend to think of our personal happiness first before we think of, you know, the collective happiness.
I mean, even you want to kind of like throw a wrench into this answer, right? Like, the collective happiness is why you, I mean, some people will say, like, you know, I'm happy because others are happy. Isn't that a bit selfish? Because you are relying on other people's happiness to make sure that you're happy. So I'm what I'm doing is utilizing you to fulfill my own emotional needs.
Okay, but I'm going to end with this. All I'm sort of like asking, I think, perhaps, is that we perhaps just be mindful of an earlier interpretation of the word happiness. So if you say me, my happiness, I mean, I would like us to think of our collective happiness.
The community's happiness.
Yeah, and that we have a right to be individually happy, but we just have to be mindful of the greater community.
But isn't there a danger of saying that? Because say that the community at large is a section of society that is there by numbers.
Yeah, and is anti my happiness.
No, and what you're saying is that what makes the majority happy is the oppression of a minority.
Oh, Sim, you make a good point.
Right, exactly.
Which is why I'm going to cut you off right there. Make sure you don't make any more. That's a good point. That'll be for another day, but we must move on.
And part two.
Yeah. And in a moment, though, in topic number three, we're going to discover Hanif's private happiness here on A Bit of Culture, BFM 89.9. And we're back with myself, Cam Ruslan, Sim Weeboon, and Hanif Baharuddin. And now, Hanif, finding joy in things that society finds not so good.
Yeah. So I guess in thinking about this topic, or today's theme rather, I sort of like related to my personal experience of enjoying metal music. Yeah. And I find joy and happiness in metal music. But I know for a fact that the public out there don't really appreciate it as much. You know, they see it as loud, aggressive, vile even to a certain extent. Yeah.
Satanic,
yes. Yeah. So these are the stereotypes that I have to deal with. Yeah. And I mean, I don't mind dealing with these stereotypes.
But did someone accuse you of being a Satan worshipper?
Well, not yet, I guess. Not that yet directly. Yeah. But the idea is that personally I do really enjoy metal music. And it's not just I appreciate them. There's this one time I found myself actually gleaming with joy while listening to metal music. And I find it very weird. Like, you know, like wow, you know, I'm in my, you know, early 30s now, and I'm still finding these little pockets of happiness and joy in listening to this kind of music. People have put me on the spot and asked me why I enjoy metal music, and I've given them answers. But what I'm interested to find out here is that how can I find joy in things that are considered very like aggressive and loud and harsh to some extent?
Because
you are not any of those things. You and
I would
yourself.
Like to think so. Yeah, yeah. I would like to think so. That I'm not that kind of
but
person.
But actually, metal fans generally are not that.
Yes.
It's just the image that is being portrayed. I mean, there's probably a small segment of it.
Is there even? I don't even know if there is. I don't know.
I mean,
they're like, that's some of the nicest people I've met.
I know. Yeah, same too. I have a lot of friends that are, you know, heavy metalism. But I'm very sure that every tribe, every sector has a bunch of troublemakers, like, yeah, no matter where, you know.
Yeah. Yep.
But Hanif, can I ask you, the joy you find in metal music, is it a very private joy?
Yeah, definitely. It's more private. And I acknowledge that and I've embraced it. So I don't really try to, you know, let others listen to what I'm listening to unless they want to. I don't feel the need to share with others because I know that it's something that is, I guess, frowned upon to some extent. I mean, that sounds a bit harsh.
You're very hard on yourself. I mean, I offered earlier, I said we could play out with one of your favorites. And you're like, no. But do you go to metal community things, concerts, I don't know.
Not really. Only because
we've gone a few shows together,
but not metal shows.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like, I don't know whether I fit the stereotype of a metal head because I don't. While I enjoy the music, I don't really believe in, you know, dressing up like a metal head or, you know, and all those things. Yeah,
but that's kind of changing though because I know a lot of metal heads. You know, even punkers. You know, they don't dress stereotypically. You know, a lot of them just look normal. You would never have kind of like, you know, if you're putting the image on, you would never have like, you know, stereotype them as a metalhead.
Yeah. And I guess my relationship to the music is also slightly different in the sense that I relate to it more on, this might sound a bit more pretentious, but more on an intellectual level rather than an emotional level. So I don't necessarily listen to metal music because I'm always angry internally. I listen to it because I appreciate the musicianship of metal music.
The way they play those three chords.
Honey listens to gent, guys.
But let's expand on the conversation beyond just metal music. Like, for example, I don't get boxing. Because I find boxing as a sport that is very aggressive. And I do watch a fair number of sports. Yeah. But I don't get boxing. But I do know people who appreciate boxing. Yeah. So that's the point here, right? The conversation here is supposed to be about why people can find joy in things that are sometimes, aggressive, sometimes, quote unquote negative, for lack of a better term, right?
Yeah. I'm struggling to think of, I mean, I don't do dogfights anymore, so I'm past that phase of my life. But I know that, I mean, I've been doing a lot of studying on the early history of the Southeast Asia and stuff. And across Southeast Asia, cockfighting has been very popular. And it's still very popular, say, in Bali. And it's something that I find completely disgusting. But at the same time, in order to sort of understand, be empathetic with cultures, you got to kind of like accept it on some level. Not that I'm saying that your metal music is, akin to that. But you got to kind of, if that's the in, if that's really important to a person or a culture, you got to kind of respect
it. Well, I think it also taps into kind of like a primal kind of thing like that. Like one of my kind of, like, I think, controversial, I don't know, something, things that people would probably think is distasteful is, I like watching people fight on social media.
What do you mean, like fight?
Yeah, and there's like a account that I follow. That they just have in New York in the subway insult each other and then they fight and it's hilarious.
Is it?
Yeah. Why? I find it hilarious.
Yeah. How come?
I don't know why.
And if you're nodding as well,
I don't find it hilarious. I don't enjoy them, but I'm relating to Sim's appreciation.
I'm not relating at all.
Like, I'm not saying bullying videos. This is not like school kids being bullied and, what entertains me is actually the bully being beaten up. They say, that guy got what he deserved. But it's again, it's violent. It's, some kid got punched in the face, some shit got punched, it's violence and it's, I know it's bad, but I won't deny that I chuckle when I see it,
Okay, it's like watching Tom and Jerry or something.
Which, I mean, all kids enjoyed.
Well, yeah, but Tom and Jerry's cartoon.
But you were like five and you're watching a mouse torture a cat.
No, but I knew it was a cartoon, Sim. It wasn't like some fella on the subway torturing.
But when you're younger, I mean, it's hard to distinguish reality.
No, I knew it was a cartoon.
You're more intellectual. This way.
What? Come on.
Okay, let's put judgment aside and let's explore that. Why do some people, find joy in this?
It taps into
right?
a primal thing. When you tear down the civilized society, the whole kind of like, mannerisms and everything, and you just, everyone is a spectator,
comedy... somebody once said, I think it was like Charlie Chaplin. I think Charlie Chaplin said that drama is a close-up, comedy is a wide shot. So the same thing that you're watching, if the camera was that much closer and was actually right on the faces of the people involved and you saw the strain and the anger and the hatred on their faces and the blows being impacting the faces, you probably wouldn't find it so funny.
Yeah, actually, I'm very sure I would be, I'd be mortified.
But that wide shot where you kind of lose their sense of humanity and their individuality, then it can become funny. Kind of being a filmmaker myself, I've kind of like become attuned to wondering about what is the close-up. And there's a sitcom before your time, Everybody Loves Raymond.
Oh, we watched it.
I never liked it because it was just a bunch of really horrible people being horrible to each other. But because we were wide shot, we were far away, we were laughing at them. We could enjoy their misery. But I couldn't help thinking that if you were in there, if you were actually one of the members of that family, life would be miserable.
I mean, I guess maybe it's also kind of like a therapeutic kind of thing because you look at it and you see like, oh my God, my life could be like that. Thank God I'm not like that. Too bad for that guy. I mean, it could be like that, I guess,
You're really evil.
I mean, like, for me, like, okay, when we, let's drill down to that videos that I watch, right? I think the wide shot is watching it, but the close up is when I click on it and I just read the comments. Then you realize, like, how mean people can get, you know, because then you see like, you know, oh, you should have done that, which is like way worse or something. Or someone posts a link like, actually, guys, there's a context to this. And yeah, exactly. It's really horrible.
Then, yeah, yeah.
Which I actually do. Like, I do click
and,
on it.
And then you feel bad.
No, and then
or
I look
laugh
more,
louder.
Very depending. Very,
different kind of laugh.
No, sometimes it's just like a video, you don't see the context. Then you click on it and you see like, this guy tried to like rob this guy and he got what he deserved. And you're like, oh, great, justice is served. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's get back to Hanif's thing. enjoyable segue, though, that was. So, Hanif, I am curious, though, that I think there's absolutely nothing wrong. I don't think anybody would say there's anything wrong about what you did by listening to the metal music. It's not to my taste.
Yeah.
And but you seem to feel very self-conscious about it. It's not something you want to share with others. You don't want to play it in front of other people. It is a very invasive sound. It's huge.
Yeah.
Big sound.
Well, I guess maybe I'm just trying to be a bit more considerate, considering that, yeah, there are not many metalheads out there, right? I mean, in an office of like 70 people, we only have like 2 metalheads here. So I guess to a certain extent, that shows how unpopular the genre is.
It's not light background music.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, it's foreground.
It's foreground. Yeah. It demands your attention. But you find great joy in it.
Yeah. Since
when?
Since 15, 16, I guess, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I've thought about a lot of things that, I mean, Sim said as well, about whether it's me maybe trying to explore my inner primal instinct, I guess, to some extent. And
different metal bands have different way of, like, you know, I mean, one of the sub-genres of metal that I found that was really interesting was this band Him. Yeah, I know, and they brandished themselves as love metal, you know.
Oh, okay.
Same love song, but they call themselves metal, you know. I mean, these subgenres are interesting, you know. And that definitely doesn't tap into your primal instinct of rage. But again, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to move on, but I'm going to pass judgment quickly before we do. I think that you've, in listening to this music, you find a community that works for you. It's very private. And it's a community that you understand within, in the way that you wish to understand it, because the community from which you are supposedly from and which you are supposedly meant to adhere to does not answer all the questions that you have, but this one does.
Interesting. Yeah.
So, we move on, though, now to the final part of the show, recommendations. We recommend something that we think might be of interest. Sim's going to go first.
So I'm going to recommend something that I watched recently, and it made me very happy. And I mean, I wouldn't say it's bad or anything, but it was just, it's a reality TV. It's reality TV.
Is it people punching each other?
No, it's not. It's way better. It's called Love is Blind. It's on Netflix. Yeah.
Okay.
The premise is these people, they join these contests, guys and girls, and, you know, they spend time talking to each other, but they're separated in pods. It's an experiment, they call it.
In pods.
Like, so you and me, like, you know, we talk to each other, but you don't get to see how I look like.
Okay.
So we talk, we share each other, you know, for a couple of days, for like less than 10 days. And then out of all the people you talk to, you pick one that you fell in love with and you get engaged.
Okay.
And then you go for a honeymoon and then you move to the same apartment for a few weeks and then you get married.
What?
So all less than a month. The premise is Love is Blind is because from the moment I met you and talked to you and the time that we fell in love is I've not seen how you look like at all. So, you know, I don't see the physical beauty, the physical attraction, and whatever, what made me fall in love with you is the what's inside and what we talked about. But, you know, which is the premise, but the ensuing conflicts and dramas and absurdity is absolutely hilarious.
Sorry, at which point do they get to see each other?
After they propose.
Right.
Then, you know, then you get to see each other. Then you're like, oh, yeah, I've seen you for the first time.
And so the reveal is, oh my God, I made a terrible mistake. Or, oh, I'm so lucky.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, but it's so funny because, like, you know, after like maybe 3 days of talking to you, I'm in love with you. You are the one for me. And then we get married. And then they discover more stuff about it. Like, actually, no, I don't want to do this. It's one of these type of shows that you turn your brain off. You just watched for, like, I don't know, not to say background noise, but you know that watching it won't really add anything of value into your life. Yeah, but I think it makes me happy. I watch it while I'm eating. I watch it with my girlfriend, you know. So yeah, I recommend that if you want to watch, especially where quarantine season is in full effect right now. So yeah, you know, just 10 episodes on Netflix.
I really admire your championing of bad taste across the board, Sim.
Hey, I mean, taste is taste.
you say it loud, say it proud.
Good taste is what you call elitism.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and with that in mind, I'm going to do my recommendation. So hang on, that's called Love is Blind, huh?
Yeah, it's called Love is Blind. It's on Netflix, yes.
Okay, cool. So my recommendation is I have spent the last week in the Sabah State Archives in Kota Kinabalu. And it was fantastic. And I experienced absolute true happiness of the kind that Hanif has been describing when he's in the car listening to death metal music. At the end of it, I just had this big smile on my face, and I was like, I can't believe I've got this big smile on my face, and it isn't going away, and it's fantastic.
What made you happy about it?
Because I think I was just really in my element, and I felt like by spending so much time looking at the past, many different types, many eras of the past, that I was home. I think that kind of level of happiness is when you go home, wherever. And many of us don't really know where home is, and I kind of found home in the past.
Mm. What's the best way to approach an archive, I guess? How do you go about it?
It's really hard, but it was very easy in KK because they were very well organized, and so approaching it was very simple. And also my subject was quite small inside the big thing, so I was able to quickly look just for the bits that I needed.
So you already have a subject?
I already got a subject, yeah. But if you're looking for a subject, if you go to the National Archives here, well, you know, the National Archives, they're going to be predominantly just about the colonial era. So you're going through the names of files which describe things like murder suspect found on the road to Seremban. And you think, oh, that sounds interesting. So you look that one up, and then you might find stories inside there that just kind of give you a bigger picture. But I guess my recommendation isn't necessarily to go to any archives, but I wouldn't have been able to recommend this last week, but I found a place along the way last week that gave me such happiness and joy. So my recommendation is, I guess, in a sense, I'd like to find that again. And may any of you find something like that at some point ever.
The National Archives of KK.
Just worked for me. Isn't that the weirdest place to find that kind of joy? So, Hanif, what you got?
My recommendation is it's a new Malay periodical called Swara. I think it's Sanskrit for Swara. And we interviewed them on Night School recently. So, I mean, I'm not trying to plug that episode, but it's just that I find...
You just did.
Look it up on High School, on BFM.
But it's just that, yeah, I find it quite interesting because I've been reading it and I really enjoy it. I think, but what's more important about it is that I think it's high time we support initiatives like this. Not a direct endorsement, but I feel like there is a vacuum, in especially in Malay intellectual, I guess, discourse, that we don't have a print publication that sort of like supports it, right? Which is kind of sad. So the fact that these guys came up with this is very interesting, and I feel like it's worth checking out just to see the quality. Judge it for yourself. But I feel like maybe we should start supporting initiatives like this, and maybe start asking the question why we don't have enough Malay publication that is kind of like intellectual out there.
Could you tell us some of the subjects in this first edition?
So it's a cultural... intellectual publication, so it explores topics like, I think for the first issue they have they spoke to Pak Samad about his time as a journalist rather than as a writer, right? So they explored what happened when he was I think a journalist back then, and then we also have Faisal Tirani, of course. I mean, if you know him, he wrote about Dangdut in Kelantan. Yeah, cool. Yeah. So you also have like a piece on Dirgahayu, like a progressive rock band. So if you want a piece on like, you know, what happened that led to them being inactive today, you can probably check them out. Yeah, check. I mean, you can read the story in Swara.
Cool. And where can you buy it?
You can get it in go to their Instagram page. They have a lot of I think they list down all the places where you can get Swara, but they're also available in Kinokuniya now, among other places. Yeah, Tintabudi, Kinokuniya, I think Gerak Budaya as well.
See, Sim, that is the kind of caliber of recommendation.
Very
we want.
BFM, yeah.
No, we don't want
I'm just being true to myself. I'm just
each other.
Being
true. That's what we want.
You recommended finding happiness in an archive. You are recommending a very nicely designed, you know,
it's beautiful.
Very beautiful intellectual piece. I'm just like, this is how you switch off after doing all that. flat.
Okay,
yeah.
Right. Anyway, so Swara. Yeah. Looks great, and its first edition just came out.
Yep.
So anyway, that brings us neatly to the end of this week's show, which was a special happiness-themed show. Although he won't let us play out with one of his pieces of music, and if I'm just going to ask you, just quickly name, recommend some death metal band or song or what have you that brings you great joy.
The Black Dahlia Murder, Moonlight Equilibrium. I mean, if you want to check that out.
Band is called The Black Dahlia Murder.
Yeah, the band
Murder.
Is called The Black Dahlia Murder. The song is called Moonlight Equilibrium. Very in-your-face death metal band.
Oh, sounds beautiful. So that brings us to the end of this week's show. So special thanks to Sim Weeboon.
Good to be here. Happy to be here.
Happy, good. And, Hanif Baharuddin, great to have you here. First time.
Thanks for having me here, Cam.
And myself, Cam Ruslan. And please join us next week for another exciting episode of A Bit of Culture here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.